Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny Lurie, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. And this is an unusual Saturday episode, and the reason for that is pretty clear, because the Warriors played a game on Friday night, and it was certainly a strange contest for a lot of reasons. Even though the Warriors actually had fewer turnovers than they did against San Antonio in the opener, it felt a lot sloppier. Also, it was more of a two-way street than it was against the Spurs, who were just more dominant and more consistent, or if you want to call it that, more Spursy. Whereas the Pelicans helped out the Warriors more than a little bit by their fair share of mistakes. And so I thought and I made this comment on Twitter, that the game was kind of summarized by this stretch in the fourth quarter where the Pelicans were coming back and the Warriors made kind of an unnecessary, unforced error. And then as the Pelicans were bringing the ball back down, they ended up having a weird mistake, turning the ball over. And then I believe it was Curry threw it ahead to Kevin Durant, who made the basket, and that got pretty close to sealing the game. And so in a lot of ways, that's what this game was. But it's worth remembering that the Warriors will have games like this, that they're so talented that they don't need to bring their best every night to beat every team. So we don't know for sure how often that is going to be the case, but the rest of the West, you know, outside of that top few teams, is shaky enough that it certainly could be possible for them to win more than their fair share of games like this. And to be clear, there were players that had some really good performances. Stephen Curry was shaky for some of the night, but had a really nice third quarter. Klay Thompson was the reverse. He had a shaky third quarter, but played pretty well the rest of the game. And I'm sure for many people, the standout in terms of the starters was Kevin Durant. He had a nice all-around game, including 17 rebounds, all of which were defensive. And that makes sense, because offensively, he's often not near the basket, because when he's near the basket, he's usually laying it up himself and finishing it successfully. Also, Durant, for the second game in a row, was important at getting to the line, and he had almost half of the Warriors' free throw attempts and makes. He was 12 for 12, and the team overall was 25 of 28. And that gives the Warriors a different dynamic, because in the Curry-Thompson era, whether we're talking Mark Jackson or Steve Kerr, they have not been particularly adept at getting to the free throw line. And having Durant on the team carries additional spillover effects, because when you have players that get you into the bonus more quickly, then smaller fouls become shooting fouls. And that happened a little bit in this game. It'll happen more later on in the season, but that's a big help. And I mean, while it's not nearly as big as that, Klay Thompson, Stephen Curry combined 7 for 8 from the line. So that you want to see kind of at least that level of play from them in terms of getting to the line. And also, what should be encouraging to a degree to Warriors fans about a game like this is that they were able to beat an opponent on the road with a bona fide star player. And yeah, New Orleans has a lot of other players that are not up to snuff, we'll say it that way. But it is also exciting to see them win a game like this where, you know, a lot of guys didn't have their best performance, but overall they did pretty well. And so to win a game like that, and they, you know, they got a little bit closer towards the end, and that could be taken a lot of different ways, and you really have to see how this particular team deals with that sort of a challenge before making any sort of proclamation or prognostication. But generally speaking, the Warriors have reacted to disappointment with playing more aggressively, playing with more urgency, and that fourth quarter where they had it sealed and then it got a little bit close. You know, I think the closest it got was 6, might have gotten a little bit closer than that. But what that leads to is just the idea that a game, you need to make sure that the game is all the way out of reach. And it did get the starters a little bit longer in terms of minutes, which is not what you want when there's still 2 more games left of the road trip. And the most daunting of those games is the final one, which is at Portland on Tuesday. So the starters were kind of the starters in that way. The only other guy that I wanted to mention there is Zaza Pachulia. And in the first quarter particularly, Pachulia showed why he has value to this team, because he can convert the openings that are created for him or basically force somebody outside of the top four guys. And those are going to be a part of the Warriors team, and they should and will try a lot of different players in that role. But one of the key elements that that person has to do, whatever their position is be able to convert on the opportunities that present themselves. So for a guy like Iguodala, or maybe Patrick McCaw, Ian Clark, that's going to be maybe some open threes, maybe some, you know, transition looks that you just have to hustle down the court. But for Pachulia, it was a couple of nice post-ups off switches. It was a couple of just hustling down the court in transition. And he needs to be able to do that, because what is becoming, I don't want to say it's a growing trend because it's a little bit too early for that, but let's say an elevating concern is the idea that he's just not scaring the other team defensively. And so people focus a lot on shot blocking as being the end-all be-all in terms of center defense, and that's really not true because there are a lot of other things they can do, including rebounding, which Pachulia did well in this game. He had 11 boards in 17 minutes. That's certainly not bad. But in some ways, more important than blocking shots is changing shots or influencing players into not taking them at all. And it's hard to convey statistically, though Nylon Calculus has done a pretty good job, and there are other people that do, but the deterrent effect in particular is very important, because generally when a shot towards the rim is deterred, a inferior shot is what is created. So that means sometimes guys are pulling up from mid-range, sometimes that means they're passing out and then floats around a little bit and they get a turnover or something like that. And so Andrew Bogut was great at that. You know, a lot of good centers are very good at not only blocking shots and changing shots, but also deterring them from happening in the first place. And so Pachulia just isn't putting fear in the hearts of drivers or passers in that way at this point. However, it should be noted that he has done a decent enough job in the rim protection metric I use is the Nylon Calculus one, and I like to do it in terms of per 36 instead of per game, because that scales on minutes. And off the top of my head, I think Pachulia was pretty solid in that last year. He wasn't, you know, at the same level as either Bogut or Azili, but, you know, solid enough. And he's going to have to be at that point to create that value. And while it's totally understandable that, at least for at the beginning of the season, they will want to use Pachulia in that starting role, and, you know, they signed him. He was their second most expensive free agent for a reason, because he was the guy who they expected to fill the center role. But intellectually, something I want to see over the course of this season is Pachulia playing a little bit with the second unit, just to see how that works. David West, to a degree, has kind of gotten the short shrift. I was thinking during the first quarter of this game that I'm sure David West would love to have the opportunities that were created for Zaza Pachulia in this game, but because he's the one coming off the bench and it's a little bit more sporadic, and by then the lineups have changed a little bit, he's not getting that opportunity. And I don't think West would necessarily be better at it, especially because he seems more comfortable in the mid-range, and, you know, he can't finish, than Pachulia, who just gets the basket. But I'm sure he would like that opportunity. But I alluded to it before, but it is important to go into a little bit more depth, is that Zaza Pachulia did a great job in this game of attacking switches when they presented itself. And so we often, as people who follow the Warriors closely, think about switches in terms of the small guy. The small guy has some, presumably somebody bigger than a point guard on him, and so they can attack by driving, or maybe they get him off balance and shoot a pull-up or something like that. But with both Durant and Pachulia and a few other guys on the team, you really want to press the advantage sometimes there by passing, because Pachulia and Durant in particular are talented scorers, and in that kind of a situation, because they also can both hit free throws, if they draw a foul, they can succeed in that way, and not only help by making the free throws, but by getting closer to the bonus and everything like that. So they did a much better job of attacking that with Pachulia in this game. He reacted well, 4-6 from the field, 2-2 from the line, and so it offensively showed where he can have value for this team. But really, their bread is going to have to be buttered, at least partially on the defensive end. So we will have to see on that. The other big story, and some people might actually see it as a bigger story than some of what happened with the starters, was a couple of nice performances by bench guys. And even though it didn't happen first, the most notable was Kevon Looney in the third quarter. He did a really nice job of bringing energy and rebounding and just overall effort. He had 3 rebounds in 7 minutes and was plus 13. And I don't love plus minus as a stat just because it's measuring a lot of things outside of that player's contribution. But at certain moments, it helps convey what that person did. And Looney was active. He was contesting shots, doing a lot of the kind of dirty work, if you will, that you want. And also he had 2 assists, which is a nice thing, which means that he's getting the ball in a good situation and making the right decision. And a lot of times making the right decision is not taking the shot, and that can be hard for young guys who are looking to establish themselves because they want to do that. And so Looney deserves a ton of credit for that. And in the first, I think it was the Reddit mailbag on this show, one of the questions was a best case scenario for Kevon Looney and for Patrick McCaw. And what I said as the best case scenario was that he could become a poor man's Draymond Green. And it is important to mention that if that were true, you know, if he could get to that point, Looney would be succeeding offensively in a very different way. He does not possess Green's passing ability, Green's ability to handle the ball, but Looney's a great offensive rebounder. He should be able to hit shots when they're open, and then if he can make a good decision, even if it's not creating the decision the way that Draymond does, that could be enough. And tonight was the first real inkling in a real NBA game that Looney can provide some of that, and he was playing a role more closely aligned to what Draymond does in some of those death lineups and some of those small lineups. And considering the trouble, concern that the centers or the people who are playing center, whether they're true centers or not, have had with the Warriors, giving Looney that sort of a shot, if he can handle it physically, is certainly worth taking the attempt because he's another possibility there. And then they should also play him at power forward, a lineup that I've been intrigued by just intellectually, a combination more than a lineup, is playing Looney and Draymond Green together. And part of the reason you don't want to play Green at center too much is because it's too physically demanding, but if you can stagger that a little bit by putting in Looney and having Looney maybe take the harder assignment and playing fewer minutes, then it could work. And Looney hasn't really shown the range on his three-pointer like he did in college at UCLA, but he should be able to get there. And even the ability to hit deep twos is something that can bend the defense in ways that guys like Pachulia and JaVale McGee can't. And the hope is that David West can do that, but Looney has been more active on the boards, more active defensively early on. So it's certainly something they should try in different capacities, and we'll really see how it works out. The other really big takeaway from this game was the way that Steve Kerr used Patrick McCaw. So McCaw was actually deployed in the first quarter. The Warriors had a lead. They were playing all right, but it was just kind of that awkward phase of the game. And so I think Kerr brought in McCaw to just kind of change up the dynamics. And the Warriors didn't outscore the Pelicans. It was actually neutral during the few minutes McCaw was on the floor. But the decision to put him in is worth watching. And then the fact that he looked like he belonged, you know, he was active defensively, wasn't forcing anything offensively. That was good. And then he played much better in the second quarter when his defense stepped up and he hit a 3 and had an assist and just a couple of other nice plays, the type of things that don't show up in the stat sheet, but some good defensive possessions. And that's really what you're looking for with the idea of McCaw being a kind of a different cog in this machine, because the idea starting the year was that Ian Clark was going to be that guy. You know, we needed somebody who was a 2 to step up in with some of the starters or something like that, that it was going to be Ian Clark. And that is still my expectation, but Kerr used McCaw in that capacity today, and Ian Clark didn't even play until McCaw went out with the sprained ankle. And the reporting that I've seen so far, some by Roz Golden Wooday, some by Monty Poole, is that that McCaw has what sounds like a high ankle sprain. I think it's his left ankle, and Anthony Slater said that he'd never sprained his left ankle before. He'd only sprained his right, and that it usually took him about a week to come back. I could be flipping the legs, but the story is generally true. And then Monty Poole reported that he left the arena on crutches, and that's never a good sign. So my expectation, without knowing any of the specifics other than that the x-ray came back negative, is that he's definitely out for the rest of this road trip, for the 2 remaining games. But that, you know, we don't really know beyond that. So it'll be something to watch, not only in terms of, you know, how they treat McCaw, because they can certainly be a little bit patient with him, but the Warriors are not particularly deep on the perimeter. It's been a real point of concern, and something that was noted when they kept so many centers was that, you know, they are a little shallow on the perimeter. But also to see how Ian Clark does, knowing that he's going to have an unambiguous opportunity, that was not the case in this game. You know, Clark didn't play in the first half. He really only played in the second half once McCaw got hurt. And so will that lead to anything? You know, it's hard to know. And I'm not saying like, oh, McCaw's going to play, Clark's going to play even harder now that he has that opportunity, because the guys play as hard as they can no matter what. But it could open up different opportunities, especially because the Warriors don't always have the toughest opponents. And so we'll see what happens over the next, let's say, week or two to see if Clark can establish himself in the role that many of us thought he already had in the first place. Outside of those guys, Iguodala and Livingston were both closer to their norm than the first game. Not surprising, considering San Antonio has a stacked bench and New Orleans doesn't really. But Iguodala taking shots, he attempted 7, made 4, is significant, because that you need to have opponents that know that you're going to take those kind of shots, so that they close out harder on you, so that they stay closer, and that creates space for everybody else. And also for Iguodala, he's so good at reacting that that can open up lanes in a lot of other ways. And he had 3 assists and no turnovers in this game. Livingston, another kind of floaty game for him offensively. He did make 2 shots, which is an improvement off of game 1, but he only had 1 assist and he had 1 turnover. And his role, if the Warriors are going to go with the kind of Durant Curry stagger more often, his role is fundamentally different than it was last year, where after Iguodala took on kind of, they tried him in that catalyst role and it didn't work super well. Livingston was that guy. And that was something that I think he was pretty comfortable with, and they have better spacing around him this time, but the ball is in Durant's hands more often, and so that will lead to a fundamentally different role for Livingston that he might just have to figure out, because it's different than what he's had before. And when you have been a point guard your entire life, especially a point guard who has a limited jump shot, at least outside of 15 feet, that will be an adjustment. And the Warriors should fiddle with some other kind of lineup combinations. I've suggested the idea of doing Durant, McCaw, and Clark before, but just trying out different things. And the absence of McCaw will certainly force some of those adjustments to be dealt with head on, because they're going to probably have to play some serious minutes with Livingston, Ian Clark, and Durant together. And then they don't have a ton of other depth outside of Iguodala to make it so that Durant can slide to the 4 without having more starters in the game. So Kerr and the coaching staff will have more to deal with now over the next week or so, but you know, they should be able to handle it reasonably well. And also, you could call it important, 0 minutes whatsoever for either JaVale McGee or Anderson Varejao. That is, to a point, the way that it should be. I mean, you'd hope that David West is going to have a better performance than he did, but if Looney is playing the way he did, he provides a versatility offensively that can be very useful. He's also a great rebounder, and they should give JaVale some shots there, but if Looney works, that's great. And the fact that he can play kind of multiple positions defensively and switch and everything like that, you could build some other kinds of defensive units around Looney that aren't possible with JaVale McGee. And that doesn't mean, you know, JaVale should be sitting on the bench forever. They should try out a lot of different combinations. But it was very encouraging to see Looney take that spot and make the absolute most of it, because him showing something, not only because he has a lot of talent, but also because from a very functional perspective, he is one of the few players on this bench that is under contract long term, because he has two more years after this one on his rookie scale deal. The Warriors getting something from him long term, even if, let's say, it's a low end rotation player, you know, that's one spot that they don't have to fill with a free agent, and he can become much more than that. But it'll be worth watching to see how they handle that and how long it also takes to figure out what this rotation really is. Like, we saw a lot of different things tonight in terms of when Kerr used specific guys and what combinations. We saw more of Curry and Livingston together, which was an extremely successful combination last year. They played over 500 minutes together and outscored opponents by more than 20 points per 100 possessions when Curry and Livingston were together, which is awesome. You know, that's a really good combination, and there'll be more on that in my piece for The Athletic. I have the more specific numbers. But that sort of a dynamic can also come into play if the Warriors are going to do something that was more prevalent in this game of kind of doing this switching with having Curry and Green together and then having Durant and Klay Thompson together, because if you're going to have Curry and Green without Thompson, Livingston makes the most sense as a fit, though they could use Ian Clark in that role as well. So we could see more of that. It's a combination that really works, especially because Curry is so talented off ball. And so we won't really know. I think it might even be as far as like a month into the season where we'll have a sense of who's doing well and who's doing poorly, but that it won't be a definite, oh, this is the rotation, this is how things work, other than the broad strokes, which have seemed more steady, like bringing in Andre Iguodala for Kevin Durant about halfway through the first quarter, and then bringing Durant in towards the end of the first quarter. And that stretch at the end of the first, when Durant came back in, was huge. I think he was in for about 4 minutes and had 9 points and 3 rebounds, something very similar to that. And he looked really comfortable in that role. He looked really good in that role. And that helped keep the Warriors just ahead in that way. And while the Pelicans did come back, I believe they led for 35 seconds in the third quarter, that helped push the margin. So even when the Pelicans went on runs, they didn't get all the way back. And so the Warriors will need second unit performances like that to buffer it. And also, if the second units with Durant can outperform the competition, then that's the sort of thing that can lend itself to the Warriors getting blowouts and getting to rest their starters a little bit more and everything like that. There are a lot of spillover benefits to a successful second unit, and that will likely not include Patrick McCaw for the next week or so, but they should have more than enough with Livingston and Clark or Clay if they're going to do that kind of stagger to make it work. And so there's a lot to kind of piece together. Warriors' next game is on Sunday, of course, and we'll be doing another Locked On Warriors breaking down that. I'll probably try to have a guest. This one was weird just because I don't like asking people to do something on a Friday night, and considering it's a road game, a lot of the Warriors people were traveling, and then everybody who's in New Orleans, it's very, very late when the game ended. So I'll try to have guests on this on. If you enjoyed the solo episode and kind of my musings on this, let me know, and that's something I can consider moving forward. But I personally find conversations with guests more fun after a game, just because differences of opinion and everything like that. If you have any feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, you can let me know on Twitter at Danny LaRue or on email DannyLarueMBA@gmail.com. I read everything, respond to what I can. I am busy, so I make no promises of that. I do make a promise to read it, particularly in email, because you miss tweets. It's something that happens. And then you keep an eye on the show, Locked On Dubs on Twitter, Locked On Warriors on Facebook, which I'm going to get better at updating eventually. I do it on my own personal Facebook, which is actually probably a better thing. That's just Danny LaRue on Facebook. So if you're trying to get new episodes, I'm going to do my best to put all those up, but I usually do that in the morning. But the other best thing you can do for that is just subscribe, because episodes will come out generally late the night before. So if you're somebody who's up late West Coast time, you could probably sometimes get it before you go to sleep. And then otherwise, you can get it in the morning when you wake up or something like that. So you can subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review. Really do appreciate it. It is the part of the lifeblood of this business, as crazy as that sounds, because it is something we can take to advertisers. It is also something that affects things like your iTunes rating. So it really does matter to do that. And I'm overjoyed with the support that we've had so far. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.